Now, most people are nostalgic about food, the aroma of baking bread perhaps, or the Sunday roast, or if you're Marcel Proust, the taste of Madeleine can set the mind on a backward journey in time. A new show at Dublin Fringe called Irish Food A Play explores both our memory of foodstuffs and the history and socio-political fault lines in food production in Ireland. And chef, Irish chef and restaurateur JP McMahon is here to tell me more, as he is the man that wrote the play. Did you know you were talking about the history and socio-political fault lines of food production in Ireland, JP?
I probably wouldn't have put it like that myself, but I do have a bit of an academic in me, so I suppose for me, I'm very aware. I mean, being a writer as well, and since I've been writing the last couple of years, that like that food is a lot more than just nourishment and fuel for us. But for many of us, and for many people everywhere, but particularly in Ireland, for a long time it was that, just fuel, nourishment. You sit down, you eat, and then you leave, and you go off and do whatever you're supposed to be doing. But eating wasn't something you did, like, and you certainly couldn't. In my upbringing, anyway, it wasn't a kind of a feat of pleasure, you know, other than Christmas or something like that. But I mean, for me, I always, like, particularly when I went to Spain in my 20s and looking at them, going, "Oh my God, they really know how to celebrate food." And
yeah, food was almost in places like Spain. It can almost be a type of theatre in itself.
Definitely the performance aspect, and a lot of contemporary Spanish food has such a theatrical aspect when you bring stuff to the table and you've got dry ice and you've all sorts of things, and they certainly influence my thinking in that. But for me, it was writing the play was about, I suppose, thinking back. Not only, of course, food is always nostalgic, as you said, and it brings you back a lot to the moments you were when you were young.
Yeah.
But also the way that it's a vehicle for so many things, like politics. And it was interesting seeing, like, depending whether you were Catholic or Protestant growing up, you had a completely different access to food.
Yeah. Let me just stop you for a second, because I'll come back to all of those aspects that are there in the play. Because there's one thing I want to people to know, which is, yes, they'll know you as the restaurateur and the chef, but the drama side of things has been there, and an interest in drama has been there for a long time.
A long, long time. And I suppose if things went a different way, maybe I would have been a dramatist, but that's just not the way things go. And I suppose I've been cooking and writing probably the same amount of time since I was 15.
And always dramatic.
I like to write novels, and I like to write some poetry, but I suppose I was always taken to drama, I suppose, because you write for an actual space, and you write for voices, and you write for bodies, and I suppose I like that. And when growing up, going to in my late teens and early 20s, going to like the Gate and the Abbey and seeing all the different plays, and I have a particular fascination with Samuel Beckett, and probably morbidly so, but sure, that's probably a good fascination.
Is there any other kind of fascination with Beckett?
And that kind of led me on to different other areas, like looking at French drama, the 20th century, and them on the more surreal and absurd style, and there's elements of the surreal and absurdism in the play. But I've always loved it, and I suppose no more than when you write, you have to find a publisher, you have to find a producer. I suppose that opportunity just never arose, or maybe I didn't go looking for it.
And you were busy becoming a chef.
Yeah, I kept cooking, and I was writing and cooking, and it wasn't really until we did a Cava Food Cookbook, and from that we did an Irish Times column from that, and then I wrote another book. And I suppose what happened, it was food and writing kind of came together at last.
Right.
I always had food on one side, it was cooking, and you go home and then you write. And probably up until 2 years ago or that, I probably didn't write an awful lot about food until the Irish Times column came in, and you got to write about food every week. And then you start seeing it everywhere. And now I suppose this play and other ones are...
This is the first time you've written, I think, this play, Irish Food, play, is the first time that food has been front and centre in terms
100%.
Of the...
It was always some melancholy lad now, being influenced by Beckett, like, so maybe that was probably why things never worked out.
So, and what do we get in this? Because I know you've three actors, you were saying to me just before we came to air that they're actually rehearsing as we speak, and they're rehearsing in the Rustic Stone restaurant on George Street in Dublin, which is where the play is going to happen.
And so it's very nice that it's in a restaurant, because the whole purpose of the piece and the purpose of the Fringe is that it's kind of thinking outside the box, and it's like, well, how do we fold the space of the restaurant and the space of the theatre on top of each other? And so while there is a performance and the actors will be moving around the restaurant, we do have
moments where food is served to the people. Food that is mentioned in the play. And I know...
Hold on. Findus Crispy Pancakes is mentioned in the play.
I could not find Findus Crispy Pancakes.
I was booking 7 tickets immediately
I looked everywhere. And I other than making them myself and we just...
And were you a chicken and leek crispy pancake or were you a minced crispy pancake?
I think my memory's chicken and leek, but we also had... Was there one with liver in it or beef and kidney or beef and...
Maybe that's the mincy one that I...
Vague memories, but we literally, because when people look at me and I've got 3 restaurants and a Michelin star.
And a Michelin star.
And they say, God, you must have grown up some gourmand. And I was like, God, like a Findus Crispy Pancakes was probably the highlight of my week.
And crisp sandwiches are also mentioned.
Crisp sandwiches, absolutely.
In fact, tato sandwiches.
Tato sandwiches. I put, and it might seem bizarre, in the cookbook that is coming out in 2020 for an international audience, I put a crisp sandwich into it.
How do you make a crisp? You open the bag of crisps, you put it on the bread, 100%. And you put salt on
it. I think as it says a lot about the sociology of Irish food, a crisp sandwich. And I could have put a sugar sandwich. We were rare on sugar sandwiches.
Butter and sugar,
well.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they still have teeth in our head. And I think I mentioned that in the play Sugar Sandwiches. But like the composition of the play, which is interesting of itself. So there's a little bit of verbatim in the play, in the sense that I did a survey with 10 questions online a couple of years ago.
What sort of questions were you asking in that?
What's your first memory of Irish food? Do you think Irish food and religion have any correspondence? What Irish food and politics? And a lot of people just said no, they don't. It was funny. No. And it's really funny how we just separate things and food folds into everything. So I got 331 and then I cut them all up, stuck them all back together, and then wrote in between it my own, I suppose, biography of food.
All right. So because the Catholic and Protestant thing is, it's a refrain that keeps coming back again and again in the play.
And that came out of the survey, because that wasn't really in my thinking. And it was funny, one of the people in the survey had kind of said tongue in cheek that like oranges don't grow in Ireland. And I didn't realise that they weren't talking about oranges, they were talking about Protestants, and but at the same time, like particularly on the game side of things, a landed gentry, when you have that conception. And for me growing up, there were certainly no wild ducks flying around and shooting them out of the sky and that. And but then people were coming back saying, well, what type of food did you have when you were younger? And people were saying, well, wild duck and smoked eel and salmon and trout. And I was like, I had Findus Crispy Pancakes and tato and that. And so it gives us a real broad idea of what Irish food is, rather than just trying to focus on one thing.
And there's a very specific memory in this play, and I don't know if this is from yourself or is this from the survey that this came as well, a memory of a father, and it was the father who got all, well, he didn't get dressed up, in fact he was in his pyjamas for the entire Christmas period, he did all the cooking in his pyjamas.
Yeah, no, that isn't one of mine, but that is, some of them are really amazing, and there's such an emotional attachment to some of the memories. And I think when people wrote them, some of them were like stream of consciousness, there was no full stops, or maybe that influenced the way that the whole play came about. And like, there isn't characters per se, there's more like actors performing, and these words kind of come out of them, which again like is a little bit on the Beckett side of things. But
how much of a performance is there, you know, in the average restaurant kitchen on a nightly basis?
So much. I mean, you could look at it, I'm sure you could analyse it, but from a chip shop to a Michelin star restaurant, like everything is a performance, because it's coordinated, it's rehearsed, and you do it. And even the mannerisms that you would see in the chefs, and the difference between like the casual dining and the fine dining, I think it's all performance. There's one academic, I can't remember his name, he's based in England, and Josh Abrams, and he has written on like the performance of the restaurant, and particularly the old school. And but a lot of, I suppose, the restaurant and the theatre are very much interlinked. And if you look at, I suppose, the birth of restaurants in France, they are all around that. And waiters, I mean, the waiter was the main man before the chefs took everything over.
I just am getting a text in here from Patrick. They still do a crisp sandwich at the Bookmarket Cafe in Kells, County Meath.
Oh, there you go.
Where you're not driving that down way on your way home.
But do you know, Aer Lingus do a crisp sandwich. I think it's like the best marketing ever. It's like selling someone with crisps and bread and butter, and you put it together yourself on a plane. That is just like memories.
Deirdre Shocknessy is living in shock at home. She never thought she'd hear about Findus Crispy Pancakes on RTE Arena. When did you eat your first Findus Crispy Pancake? God, have you got that memory?
It's somewhere in the 80s. Like, I'd say 83, 84, maybe. I remember putting them under the grill, and sometimes they went into the oven, and I remember the grill wouldn't, because the grill would just cook the outside of them too quickly and that. But they were, for me, they were the height of, like, gourmet experiences. Yeah. And the way the sauce came out of them. But I'm surprised they disconnected. Maybe they'll start them again after this.
Yeah. Let's start a petition right away.
Absolutely.
But the other thing that you say in the play, and I'm kind of wondering where this is coming from. This is coming from the survey again. Mm. Dev effed it up on us. Effed food up on us.
Yeah, well, that's what I think.
Do we blame Dev for everything then?
That's my line.
Your own.
That's my own.
What did Dev do then?
I suppose and it's not so much coming from me as in it's my opinion. My grandmother was a friend of Deb's, and she was from Bray, and she the sun always shone on everything Dev did, and I suppose there's a little bit of resentment there. Yeah. But I suppose with the Anglo-Irish trade war, we did lose a lot. And if you look at a book like Ulysses, which is 1922, but it's set in the earlier part, you see so much food. You see like a cosmopolitan eating.
Yeah, sure. The Burgundy Bloomsday celebrations are all about the breakfast.
And Gorgonzola. And yet throughout the 20th century, you don't have that food culture. And for me, it's like, well, where did it go? And when Italian food came back to Ireland, or I'd say came back, because I remember eating spaghetti bolognese for the first time, and I thought,
when and where?
That in Tipperary. I think that was my Proustian moment when I had that bolognese. And I remember my mum saying, "You're not going to eat that," because there was six of us and we're all having burgers and chips. And somewhere in Tipperary, maybe in Cashel, I had this and I was like, "Oh my God, food can be pleasure."
Who cooked it?
I can't remember. My father actually told me, he said it was in some restaurant room, but that is definitely the moment that I trace back. It's not, I mean, I'm skeptical of origins, but it's definitely a moment that I pinpoint. And the first place I ever worked as a chef was in Donatello's in Maynooth, and there was Italian food, and it was that renaissance in Irish food, I think, came through Italian food because there was pleasure attached to it.
The other thing that you touch on in the play, I think, is this idea. It's certainly a question that's pushed out there at one stage, is about pre-famine Ireland, you know, because we get this whole thing about the potato and the questions of, well, what on earth? You know, was that the only thing that the Irish people could eat?
Mm. The potato is a newbie. Like, it's 300 or 400 years. And, like, people have been eating food in Ireland for 10,000 years.
Well, as
and
long as they've been here, they've been eating.
As long as they've been here. Yeah. And there's different periods. And, like, you can go back thousands of years and you can, like, trout and eel and salmon and venison and pigeon and hazelnuts, a lot of wild food. Oat and barley are very important. But you still, even in the 20th century, when you have this Catholic and Protestant thing, you have that, I think, throughout Irish history, even from the Normans. You have people who have land and have food, and then people who don't. And the people who have land and food can get spices from wherever they want. And you can have spiced, like, Norman bread. But when you call the indigenous people, which kept changing all the time as well, the diet was mainly buttermilk, oats. If you're by the coast, you had herring. You might throw in a bit of seaweed as well. So it wasn't, like, the most elaborate diet ever. But I do think it became more narrow in time. But we focus on the famine too much, I think.
Two things. Catholic and Protestant food, says Sheila. Remember fast and abstinence and Fridays and on Fridays during Lent.
And fish.
All Fridays.
Probably turned
it was only
me off
fish
for life until I went to Spain in my 20s. Like, I think that's why most Irish people don't like fish. It's because they were force fed it as penance.
You see, I thought that was just being landlocked in Monaghan and growing up in Monaghan, that it was a fish thing, and people on the sea loved it.
I'm in Galway, and like, it's tourists that eat most of the mussels.
Have you ever heard of a blood pounder?
No.
Tato on bread with Kerrygold, fresh black pepper, lots of salt, and mustard.
Oh, God. That'll get you going.
Says in Drogheda. I presume that's Jim in Drogheda.
You could nearly do like a History of Ireland through the crisp sandwich. That'd be a good one to...
But as you say, it says a lot about us.
And I think we have this attitude. And again, I think it's a hang-up from French food culture, where food culture has to be high culture. But from my point is that any food culture is a culture. And so if you're eating like salmon or trout, or you're eating a crisp sandwich, it still says something about you and your food. And I think it should be, it should be celebrated.
One just a friendly one question about the play that I wanted to ask you, because you were in the original.
My first acting experience, yeah. Other than speech and drama when I was about 11 or 12, but I think they put me in a bear outfit because I was so bad, and they said, you sit down there in the bear outfit.
I'm still trying to get that picture in my head. So you were the bear up at the back. You did act in it when it was a production done in Galway.
It's part of my PhD in food and drama, and it was in December. So three of us acted this out, and my fascination was we put a live lobster. There is a live lobster in the
I was going to ask you about what happens, because you're not acting this time, but you might be doing a bit of cooking in the rustic stove.
I will be doing a bit of cooking, because I just have to make sure the food is all right, because they'll blame me if it's not. And while it is an important part of the performance, I think the ritual of eating, I think that being in theatre, I think is what will be interesting for people. I mean, it's also interesting from the director and the designer's point of view, because they're saying, well, what if the cutlery makes too much noise? And that's something, again, that I never thought of before.
And timing would be essential with the dishes here. You can't be saying, you know, if the cucumbers enter the lobster, well, it better be cooked.
We had to put a shellfish allergy just in case. Well, A, because someone teaches them or touches them, but also then if someone is a vegetarian or a vegan and they don't want...
Right, so there will be shellfish.
He won't die during the performance. I might kill him afterwards, but he won't die during it.
Okay. I'm really dying to go now and get a bit of lobster after the event, perhaps. Good, Irish food at play is what JP McMahon has been talking to us about. Runs at the Rustic Stone Restaurant on 17 South Great George Street in Dublin as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. It's from September the 15th through until the 18th, JP.
Three performances a day, and it's doing well. Two on the Sunday, I think, then three on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I know I was like, one will be enough, but anyway.
That's a lot of cooking.
The producer, she's good.
All right, and I see that Mr. Tato Ireland is very happy that we're all talking about the crisp sandwich on Twitter as well. All right, that's JP McMahon and Irish Food, a play. I feel Irish Food, a whole radio series coming off as well.
Brilliant.